couple weeks ago, we started to discuss this this sutra. Well, last week we took a break, and we were discussing some aspects of the Sunday liturgy in itself. So, the first week that we began this, all we got was the first line, which is the great way is not difficult for those that have no preferences. And we talked about the inner meaning of preference. And so a very quick recap of that. The great way, meaning our path here to accomplish our supreme goals, is not difficult so long as when we approach the path and the practice, we do not take it to court. Basically, we don't argue for our side of the story. We don't argue for our personal preferences and beliefs about the path. For example, this is not really, this is just purely an example. It's not real. But if the Buddha was to say, the path requires you to only use bodhicitta-mala, you can't argue to do something other than bodhicitta-mala. If the Buddha says you have to recite 108 mantra a day, you can't go into it and argue and say, I'm only going to do 100 and not the 8. Or I'm only going to do 54. Or some other number that you perceive is right. If you do that, the great way, this path, is going to be immensely difficult for you. It'd be very hard to accomplish anything at all. But for those that can overcome their opinions, this path is rather simple. Most people do not realize that when they come to Buddhism, how fierce this path really is. You see, we tend to have this outer view of Buddhism as being quite fluffy. We think that it has this haziness of what we in the West perceive as like the New Age. We think that it's a very gentle and free kind of thing where you can do whatever you want, basically. And it's all okay as long as you're not harming anyone. But that philosophy is not Buddhist philosophy. We absolutely have a do not harm anything philosophy. But it's not where you can do whatever you want. The no harm comes from an immense amount of self-discipline and overcoming the egoic point of view. And this is where Buddhism really draws a very sharp line. It's not hazy at all. In fact, the Buddha says the number one reason for your suffering and the number one reason why you are the cause of other people's suffering is because you cling to your ego and your opinions. So the whole Buddhist path is entirely focused on the annihilation of that. And this is rather difficult because the first thing that happens to a person when they come to the path and they face the stark reality that it's not all that fluffy at all, really, is when they have an emotional response. And the Buddhism, for whatever reason, in that situation, addresses their emotions. And one of the things I found fascinating about Buddhism is it has an absolutely zero compassionate view about feelings. In fact, it gives them zero credit and pays no attention to them whatsoever. Because generally, our feelings and our emotions arise from the point of view of the self. And so they reinforce the likes or dislikes of the self. And so Buddhism, since it roundly rejects the idea of the self to begin with, it rejects those emotions that are founded on that, and perceives emotionalism as nothing more than kind of a disease. In fact, emotions in the realm of Buddhism, they're actually called demons. They're equated to a completely negative thing. So Buddhism has no need to address them and go, oh, well, it's okay you feel that way. Not really. No matter what you're feeling, whether it's positive or negative, should be investigated on why you even have that feeling. And it will generally point back to your sense of identity in a not very positive way. And in the West, we have a very mistaken view of what that is. We tend to want to protect and promote that. We think if we can make our self happy, then everything will be great, and that must be nirvana or enlightenment. And Buddhism says if you can get rid of that thing, you will perceive actual enlightenment. So, this is our difficulty with the Great Way. Because we tend to have preference. So that's a recap on how what we had discussed. So, it is not difficult if you have no preference at all. And look what the next line is. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. That just goes further into what I was just mentioning. Shakyamuni Buddha had boiled down all emotionalism to two things: attachment and aversion, like and dislike. And in fact, it goes down to the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. And he says the first noble truth is that suffering does indeed exist for all living things. The second noble truth is that it exists based on specific cause. The cause is that you love and hate, that you accept and reject. And because of those, we have suffering. Why? Very simple. The things that you love, you don't get. That causes suffering. The things we hate, we tend to get all the time. And that causes suffering. It could be something as so mundane as how many of us have bills that keep showing up in the mail. And it seems like the paycheck is not big enough to deal with it, right? And so we get that piece of paper and we hate getting that piece of paper. We don't want it. So what we think would free us from this problem of this bill would be what?
More money!
And how many of us get it? You see, we want it, we like it, we're attached to it, but we never get any of it. Right? Everybody's like, oh, if I could just win the lottery. And no one wins the lottery. And there's usually some smartass that would say, well, you got to play it to win it. You know, this ridiculous thing. And you're just like, I don't need that from you. Right? Because we have this constant conflict. This happens with everything. It happens at school. It happens with work. You're in those environments with people that you don't want around you, and you think to yourself, man, why are they in my group? How come I can't get that guy over there or that girl over there? Right? So we have this aversion problem. Or when we do have somebody we really like, They walk in one day and say, oh yeah, I'm moving to Alaska. Now what? Or on a deeper level, it happens when your companion, you come home one day and they have all of their suitcases packed and they say, that's it, I'm quitting you. I'm out of here. You're fired. And they go out the door. The love and the hate causes us all kinds of problems. In Buddhism, we often like to say, instead of love and hate, we have a term, hope and fear. Because we do that with both things. Things that we love, we hope we get to have them again. And when we do have them, we fear that we might lose them. The things we don't like, we have the same thing. We hope we never get the flu. Right? And then, of course, when you get around somebody that has the flu, you're terrified that you're going to get it. So, this hope and fear, like this line says in here, love and hate, hope and fear, attachment and aversion. When these are absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Why? Because our hopes and our fears, those things that which we love and that which we hate, these things cause us to perceive the world from those angles, from that kind of filter, which means we never get to see the larger picture of anything at all. We're always stuck with a very, very small scope of what's happening around us. And it tends to dumb us down so that we can't even perceive the larger working of things. A great Zen master here in Minnesota, actually, in one of his books, he was talking about, he worked for a little while as a hospital chaplain, and he would do visitation for those. I think he was in a cancer ward or something like that. And so he would go and meet people that were terminally ill with cancer, and he would approach them from a Buddhist perspective, if that's what they requested. And in his text, he has a guy that he meets with over time, every week or so, and as this guy is declining in his health. But the guy has a question about this. He has a question about this hope and this fear. Because, of course, this Roshi keeps telling him, you know, this is a big hindrance for you. It's going to cloud everything. And so the guy finally asks, he says, well, how exactly does that work? I mean, what is being clouded? If I know what I like and I know what I don't like, how is that clouding things? He says, when you lose something that you love, what happens? He said, well, I have suffering. He said, get right, because you're not perceiving a larger picture. And the guy says, what larger picture is there? And so the Roshi says, look, throughout your entire existence in this form, the things that you have loved, whenever you lose them, they always come back around. And all the things that you don't like, all the things that you have aversion to, never last forever. And of course, the guy wanted to argue that. Well, my first wife left me. She never came back. And Roshi says, that's not what we mean. That person is not what you were in love with, because you probably were never conscious enough to know who that person was. because you're always in this. What you loved was the aspect of being in love and having companionship. And he said, did you ever have that again? Or did you stay lonely for the rest of your life? And the guy says, well, that's a good point because, yeah, eventually I did get remarried, had a whole family, and everything was great. He goes, you see? It always comes back around. How many of you have ever had the flu? Anyone? Only like two people? That's good. You guys are all super healthy because everybody in Minnesota up here, we must be a sick bunch because these guys have had the flu before. How many of you really enjoyed having it while you were in the middle of it? Like, it's great, right? Feels very good. Loads of energy. You can, you know, paint your whole house. It, right? No. Suffering. You lay, oh, God. You know, and you hate everything. It just, it's miserable. And all you can do is wish that it goes away. How many of you still have that flu? It's never left you. I'm the only one. Man, this is a tough crowd today. Look, that's exactly what happens. When you suffer, it never stays with you. It can't. It's not possible. Because everything in this world is subject to change. And that subject doesn't mean that it has the potential to. It means it always will. At some point, it will. I was listening to my own master give a talk one time, and somebody wanted to argue that. And they said, well, you suffer your whole life and then die. And my master said, well, as soon as you die, the suffering ends. There's your impermanence. So our hope and fear, that filter causes us to not be able to perceive that reality. It makes us stuck and wallow in whatever we're perceiving is happening to us. As if there's not going to be anything different. I remember shortly after I had left the monastery, a very dear friend of mine that I went to visit in L.A., they were, I was out there because she's going to have this big weekend where her longtime companion that she had been dating, who had been on a business trip, was coming back, and she was going to propose to them on this weekend. So I came out there. It's going to be this huge thing, you know, and we're getting all this stuff ready. She's going to do this big, big deal, right? So he comes home on a Saturday night, and she has all this stuff out, and he says, can I talk to you in the bedroom? And I thought, this does not look good. This is not going to go well, I don't think, because he just didn't really have this, wow, this is fantastic thing happening. It was more of a, what the hell's going on? And so a few minutes later, he comes out of the bedroom and picks up his car keys and goes out. And then comes the horrible wailing from the bedroom. So I go in, and there's my friend slumped onto the floor, and she just bawls out, he left me. He's not interested. So this great weekend full of all this hope and anticipation turns into this horrible thing. And what ends up happening, this stretches out for a week because she just goes into a tailspin and it like she's so devastated. And so I've got her in the car and I'm going to be taking her to some other friends of ours because she needs to get out of the house. And because she wants to break everything he owns. So I'm trying to you know, damage control kind of thing. Since she's in the car and she's completely flipping out, and the thing that she screams out is, "No one that will ever love me again." And this sutra pops into my mind. Now, this is like 15 years ago at least. This sutra pops into my mind and I went, wow. That's it right there. We can't see anything when we have this. Attachment and aversion. Our filter does not allow us to perceive anything at all. We can only see this story that we're clinging to right in front of us. And that was a huge thing at that moment. monasteries are kind of a protected, sheltered environment. So it was, you know, we certainly have our share of like and dislike in those environments, but it's nothing heartbreaking like that. But the very next line, make the smallest distinction, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. The worlds are just torn in half. And he sums the whole thing by saying, if you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. This isn't some kind of spiritual philosophy where if you want to see the truth of Buddhism, you want to see the truth of this religion. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about if you want to see the truth of the reality, the functioning and the nature of your mind and all phenomena as you experience it, and you want to see the truth of how outer sense data is manipulated by your mind and emotions, if you want to see all that, you set aside your emotionalism, and as it says, everything will become clear and undisguised, the masks fall off, the filter comes off, and then you can perceive the actual nature of reality. That is what we're calling the truth. Not the truth of enlightenment or the truth of Buddha or the truth of Sutra. It's the truth of how the mind operates with all of the phenomenal existence around you. And when you have an opinion, which is always attached to emotionalism one way or another, you cannot perceive that reality. So, this is something to contemplate as we continue working with this sutra. We almost finished the first paragraph. We got one more line in there, but he's going to get into another a deeper aspect of it. And so before we jump in that, we'll break here and just contemplate the power of your own suggestion. One of my great teachers likes to say that our opinions and emotions, which are thoroughly intertwined, work as our own hypnotic trance states. It's self-induced hypnotism. So that we get a false sense of a reality. And so we should consider that, how we exactly are programming ourselves to view what we think reality actually is. And just to throw one more little seed out there, have you ever noticed how you may be looking at something and you're maybe explaining it to someone and that person goes, I don't get it. And you're like, how can you not see what I'm saying? It's because they don't share your hypnotic state. They're not in your trance. It happens all the time. This is one of the reasons why we have such a horrible time trying to communicate with each other. It's because I need this person to also be delusional exactly like me, with the same delusion in the same exact hypnotic trance state, that we're both chickens, and now he understands what I'm talking about being a chicken. But if he's under the trance state of being a cow, and I'm like, why don't these wings work? And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. My horns aren't working. I got no wings, so I have no idea what you're discussing. And our communication breaks down because we're both completely delusional. And we're trying to have a conversation about it. And they're approaching it from the point of view of a cow, and I'm approaching it from the point of view of a chicken. And it won't work. Because we're both trying to figure out how to produce ham. And he's going, look, you just squeezed otters. What otters? What are you talking about? You gotta build a nest. And he's like, what? What is that? And we're not getting anywhere to the point of bacon. If you have any companion at all, you must have had conversations like that. You certainly can't figure out at all what the other person is, where they're even coming from. You might even say, just to be very nice, well, I understand what you're saying, but you really don't. Because you're going to say the same thing you've been saying again, as if they're somehow going to get it, now that you've said that line. Oh, no, I completely understand you. But what I'm trying to say is, we need a coop to go into to lay eggs. And they're like, what is a coop? And what's this laying eggs? I said we need to moo at every black car that drives by and chase them with our horn. As if the chicken's really going to be able to communicate with that cow.
Was there any solution to that?
There is. And we'll look at that later. But just think on that. How even communication continuously breaks down like that. And when you are trying to communicate, think about where your point of view, especially when any emotion comes up, where does your opinion and your belief in your opinion come from? And then look very hard at if there's any emotions involved. And if there are, what is it that they're promoting? Hope and fear of what? And if you see both of those up there, because you will, I hope they see my point of view. I'm afraid they won't see my point of view. See the whole my in there, then everything is ruined. You have a giant mess. So instead of thinking the other person can't understand me, you should say, I'm completely way out there in outer space. It's no wonder they can't understand what I'm saying. It's because I'm completely delusional. I'm a madman. I'm insane. And the best thing to do is then walk into the bathroom and look in the mirror and go, I'm actually a human, not a chicken. Why am I trying to talk to them as if I'm a chicken? And why am I looking at them like they should be a chicken? As absurd as that conversation of chicken and cow is, that's exactly what we are doing. It is exactly what's going on. (Clears throat) So think on that. And if you have any interest in resolving that issue, then come back next week. And we'll look at some more detail of why and how all of this happens.